Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches.
Welcome to Baroque Bitches. Your art, history, gossip podcast.
Our history, gossip podcast.
I'm Chelsea.
I'm Raquel.
And we're going to give you the lowbrow tea on some highbrow art today. We got a juicy little nugget today.
Juicy. I don't know how to make a sound effect for that.
But we can talk because I was thinking of playing a game that we played last night, yesterday, with our little Kenny of Something Rather Than Nothing.
Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. He's been so nice to us. Check it out.
Check it out.
It's like an art variety philosophical show, which we don't get very philosophical very often. But he made it get deep. I was surprised. So we'll be on one of his episodes coming up here soon. I think next month he said will be the release. So that's exciting.
Yes. Yeah. Super, super exciting. We had such a fun time chatting, but I thought we could continue on with our little game of marry, fuck, kill.
Yeah. We did an Instagram live and we forced Kenny to play this game. He had never heard of it. So sorry, Ken.
I thought it was fun too,
but it was so fun. I want to play again. It's basically like adult truth or dare.
Yes.
A little bit. Yeah. Without the dare part. Because we're all lazy. We don't want to do the dares anymore.
Yeah, no. I'm like, can I keep seated? Like,
I'm not going to get naked. I'm not going to get up and run around. I'm not going to go make out with a tree.
Like, some guy. No. Go make out with that guy. No. But I thought we could play that again. So marry, fuck, kill. And we can use our historical figures and artists.
Yeah, we'll talk about people you already know.
Yeah, so marry, fuck, kill Louis the 14th.
Oh,
Frida Kahlo.
Okay,
or Gauguin.
Okay, definitely know who I'm gonna kill. Do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, I'm gonna kill Gauguin. Okay, like hard, like violently. Yes. I'm gonna fuck Louis because honestly, I don't have a good answer for that. It would be really stinky, but apparently he did have a lot of sexual prowess.
Oh, yeah, everybody loves him.
I would make him dance first, though.
Oh, yeah, he would. He's a showman.
And I would marry Frida.
Of course.
I mean, yeah. Come on.
I definitely think I would have to marry Frida.
Out of all of that, if you're going to be stuck with one of them.
Well, you know what? I might marry Louis, though, actually. Let me fuck Frida and marry Louis. Obviously, kill Gauguin. He's got to go.
Yeah, no, he's got to go. Bye.
But I think fucking Frida would be fun. She seems a little hardcore, though, I think, as a married person.
Honestly, you might be right. Like, she might be very intense. And I do like the idea of being left alone by Louis a lot.
Yeah. You know, I just want to live in the house.
I don't want to
live in Versailles.
I don't know, though, because there's like shit and piss on everything.
That's true. I don't know forever. But maybe I could be exiled at some point.
It's a give and take in any marriage. You have to pick and choose your battles.
There's pros and cons. Oh my gosh. Good one. That'd be fun. We should do that. Maybe we should do that every episode or something.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the Louis one, you should go check that out. I listened to it again not too long ago, just to, you know, see how far we've come. And I was like, holy shit, this is funny and disgusting. This guy was disgusting.
Nasty.
But yeah. Yes. So I quit caffeine this week. And let me tell you, fucking horrible.
Damn.
If any of you have suggestions for how to make this easier, I'm doing the mushroom tea. I'm doing the vitamin B12.
Everyone's going to be like, do the mushroom tea.
My God, I'm doing coconut water. Fucking kill me. It is so hard because I feel like shit. I feel like absolute caca.
That's definitely withdrawals for sure.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, how's your week going?
Good. I am on caffeine, but I'm a tea drinker. I'm not a coffee drinker. I drink tea.
I do drink tea. I like a vanilla chai.
Yummy.
With some oat milk.
Obviously, oat milk is superior milk.
So trendy.
I don't care what you say. It's not real milk. I don't give a shit. I did this week, or last week, I guess, I did do a little LA thing. I went to downtown LA and saw Tool.
No.
With my sister.
Ears doing after that?
I know. Not well.
So much double bass.
So much bass. Holy shit. There was some times where I'm just like, am I gonna pass out because this is so loud?
Oh my God.
I'm not that old. I can handle this. I can do this. But yeah, definitely eye-opening spiritual experience, just like every time. Lots of eyeballs.
Gotta wear your earplugs, dude. Wear protection.
I know. Next time for show. Next time. Yeah. So he was at, they were playing at the Crypto Arena, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Crypto Arena. How was it?
Now, it was great. Yeah.
I haven't been there yet.
It's awesome. It's killer. It's easy. It's not like so super.
Or is that
crazy.
What used to be Staples Center now?
I think that was Staples Center. Yeah, because okay, that's where the Lakers play.
Yeah, that's where I've seen the Lakers play there. Yes. And I'm in the Staples Center pre-crypto to see Britney Spears. I saw the Queen. It was great.
The Queen.
She didn't move much. Like, she was definitely.
It's okay.
No, it's okay. Stand in one place. Nobody cares.
Yeah, she doesn't have to do fucking anything.
No,
she just has
stand
to
there.
Just stand there. You don't even have to sing. We don't care. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a good time.
Yeah. It was so fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Good one. Yeah, no, that was definitely a great experience. Tool has been a part of my life for a really long time, ever since high school.
Mm.
All that kind of grungy industrial metal.
People fucking
totally
love Tool.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Very nerdy scene too. So it was kind of fun.
You know, there are definitely some unassuming Tool fans out there, like that you're like, oh, you're business. You are like a mullet.
Totally.
Business in the front. Party in the back.
Yeah. I bet you it's probably a lot of tech guys. A lot of IT
so
over at Tool
yeah.
concert. IT guys are like, the binary would be like IT guys and like yoga instructors. And I'm somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Definitely one of those where you're like, oh, the line for the girls' bathroom is not that bad. I love metal shows for that. Of like, oh. I just pop in this little stall right here. That's cool. Hell yeah. And the guys are waiting on that. It's great.
Well, dude, awesome. I'm glad you had a good time. Have you seen them before?
No, this was my first time seeing them.
Nice.
Fun story. This was the band where I wanted to see them in high school because they don't play very often. They play every once in a while.
Right.
They were playing when I was in high school. And I think I got... You're caught with weed or snuck out or did something. And my mom was like, yeah.
No Tool for you.
You know that show you want to go to? You're not going to go. I was like, oh, my
Good
God.
For
are you,
Terry.
Are you punishing me? She's like, I got to do something. I got to do something. We can't. You have to have some consequences.
I mean, fair.
Yes, you know. I understand. Yeah, I should not have been smoking weed in that parking lot.
I get it now. You work hard, you pay the bills, I can't imagine. Parenting is so, like, just so complex and difficult.
Dude.
In a way that I can't even explain. So I can't imagine, like, once my kids turn into that I'm, like, being like, are you fucking kidding? I fucking do all this shit for you.
Dude. I mean,
but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to think it. I'm going to think it hard.
Yes. Yeah, I think, our little Diego is a Sagittarius, so you have to be careful.
Oh, my God.
He's gonna be Bacchus.
I love him so much. Today, he was, like, asking my husband, how old are you, Daddy? I'm four years old. How old are you, Daddy? And baby goes, I'm 39. He goes, whoa, Daddy, you're old. How you get so old? Why are you so old, Daddy?
But yeah, I think this is definitely the time where age, the number of your age, is a really big deal. Oh, legends.
Right. Yes. All right. So who are we learning about?
Well, if we want to start visualizing.
Fuck, finally. Yes. I look forward to this all week. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Let's visualize. Who the fuck do they think they are waving their fingers at me? Okay, I'm not as worldly and diplomatic as Rubens, but some say that I'm the master of light and dark. Very, very dark. Spooky, isn't it? You have no idea, but soon you will. Soon all of Europe will know the truth. Soon the whole world will know the truth. You don't want that sin in the light. You thought it would always be kept in the dark. But you wanted a painting. Do you even know who I am? I'm an artist, an observer, a watcher. But I understand. They're lost in the dark. Following Satan, he's right there. In black and red, he's right in front of you. He's got you by the cock. But they're not all that bad. They're just so blissfully unaware that their leaders go to orphanages instead of brothels. You don't want that in the light, do you? Did they really think they'd get away with murder? Did they really think they could get away with not paying me? They won't. Because I too live in the dark, watching, waiting for my chance to show the world my masterpiece. They will know that I'm the best thing that came out of Amsterdam. And then I will be in the light forever, right? Well, it's a shot in the dark. Maybe I should get a lawyer. Which brings us to our gossip topic, Rembrandt, A Shot in the Dark.
What the fuck is going on? I'm so excited. I know nothing about Rembrandt, except there's, like, a lot of stuff with the name on it, art supplies, right, that you can buy.
Rembrandt. Yeah, yeah, there's a company called Rembrandt.
Yeah.
But everything I will be talking about is alleged and a conspiracy theory.
Fuck yeah! That's why you're here.
That's why you're here. We're talking about it. We're talking about it. We're talking about
the painting.
The painting actually called Militia Company of District 2 under the command of Franz Banning Koch. A.K.A. The Night Watch Rembrandt.
Fuck yeah.
Yes, you gotta love a good anti-hero.
Yeah, I love it. I'm here for it. I'm excited.
Me too. Yeah. Now, there's a ton of shit on this painting and Rembrandt in general. He is the greatest Dutch painter of all time. People love this painting and hate it so much that it's been vandalized several times.
Where is it?
It is in Amsterdam.
Fuck
in
yeah.
The Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. Now it's safely heavily guarded in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam.
Hell yeah. I'm Dutch. That's what my mom says. That's where I get my high cheekbones.
Hell yeah, dude. Yes, the Dutch, especially Dutch women. We're going to talk about Dutch women.
See that?
Hell yeah, dude. So this is a super mysterious painting, and there's several conspiracy theories surrounding it. I will not get into every little tiny theory for every little symbol, just the juicy ones.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So we're going to focus on that painting, but we do need to get to know the Master of Darkness. Rembrandt. Yes. Rembrandt Harmond Zoon van Raan was born July 15th, 1606. So he's another sensitive creative Cancer.
Aw, moonchild, yeah. Right?
So many feelings.
So many feelings.
Yes, just like our Rubens. Yeah. Who was 30 years older than him.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, they're in the same little range. Rubens would have been pretty famous by then. So okay. He would have been rocking out by then, traveling and getting big commissions and all the right. things. So he's the big guy around there.
Got it.
Rembrandt was born in the city of Leiden in the Dutch Republic, which is now the Netherlands. So mm-hmm. he is technically our first Dutch painter / printmaker. And ooh. Rubens is considered the greatest Flemish painter. Yes, Netherlands got to all that drama in the 1600s.
Right.
However, this is the Dutch Golden Age, the era of Dutch independence after the 80 Years' War with Spain. They're doing really good. The Netherlands they're doing really fucking good.
They're in their golden era.
They are in their golden era. The Netherlands was able to open up for more trading opportunities, but it's all not all that good. Mm. These guys did want to be like the rest of Europe with the whole like colonization thing.
Bah, boo.
And they didn't just become heavily involved in trading goods. They're also trading people.
Fuck. No. Boo. Okay.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah. However, Amsterdam would be where the money is at this time. So it's kind of a boss bitch era, but maybe more of like a Cruella type of boss bitch in a way, because it's not all good. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
But how does our little Rembrandt fit into all of this? So the fam, he was born the fucking 9th out of 10 baby.
Oh, fuck.
Number 9 out of 10.
Just dropping out.
Boom. His mom had, but two did die as infants.
Aww.
Yes. This is the time where that's totally normal.
Yeah.
So we can get into mom first, since she's a fucking legend popping out 10 kids.
Yeah. MVP of the vagina so far for the mom.
Seriously.
Good job, mom.
Good job. We don't know much about her besides that, but Neelgen Williams, Dr. von Zutbrauck, not much is known, but we do know she was a baker's daughter, so she's pretty chill and a Catholic, but she is lovingly featured in several of Rembrandt's etchings and paintings and drawings, so we can only assume that Rembrandt loved mom.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out a kind of weird painting called Portrait of a Mother of Rembrandt. He is definitely painting her as she is. And this truthful depiction of humans being human is going
gnarly.
Yes, is going to be a common theme.
Are you sure he liked his mom? Because she just looks like she's like decaying.
Seriously, though, right? She's kind of looks like a blob.
She just looks like, skin on bones.
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be a common theme for Rembrandt's portraits that it's the most truthful depiction possible. So some people did want to be painted with accuracy and truth, but most prefer a little filter on that bitch.
I mean, like, everybody's putting a filter on Instagram for a reason. I think we've all succumbed to vanity.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. We don't really. Can you like not put every little line on my face? That'd be cool. So we could get into daddy. So who's dad? Dad is Harmon Gertzoon van Raan. So dad, I know there's some names. Sorry, all of our that's our not people. The correct our Dutch Sorry. People that are that if that's not a correct pronunciation. pronunciation. So daddy is a miller. So a miller is a guy that operates a windmill and grinds grain to make flour. So
that's like the most Dutch job you can
have. It's so Dutch. Yeah. It's super, super important in this time and one of the oldest occupations known. Wow. You will see lots of little windmills all over Rembrandt's landscape.
It's so cute. I love windmills. It's so cute. It's adorable.
Yes. But when it comes to religion, he belonged to the Dutch Reformed Church. He's a Protestant. We do have another Protestant Catholic family situation here. And Rembrandt definitely does identify with being a Protestant.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, a little different from our little Rubens who wanted to be Italian so bad. And Rembrandt did paint his father as well. So I guess he loves dad too. Fine, whatever. No known affairs with mom and dad. It's fine.
Good. Okay. It's fine. We're in the clear fine. So it's far. Fine. It's fine. But Fine.
So Rembrandt's family was actually doing pretty well, just like most other Dutch families at this time, particularly the working class. The interest rates were low, super, super low during this time. The economy was just booming. Lots of trading happening. Lots of money being spent. So everyone is kind of doing okay during this time. And being a miller was a decent job back then. So and he's making enough to support a fucking army of kids. So they're doing fine. They're fine. However, Rembrandt's finances will fluctuate over time. So money drama.
Yeah, I was sensing that from the visualize.
Yes, yeah, there's going to be
some... Bitch better have my money.
Dude, yes. And he is kind of like, he likes to sue people too.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
Yes. True yes, lawyer. So seriously... So Rembrandt as a child, when he was a kid, just like any other Renaissance guy, he went to Latin school. The classical education thing is a theme with our Renaissance artists. They're coming out of the dark ages, being reborn and studying the classical guys like fucking Plato and shit.
Right.
So yeah, just like everybody else. Now, as a kid, he was said to be curious and inquisitive and cocky. Arrogant and sarcastic.
Cool.
Yeah. So he's kind of funny.
Sassy bitch. I love him.
He's serious. He is a Baroque bitch.
Hi.
And he will remain this way until life humbles him.
That does not sound good. Okay.
So he was much less interested in formal school and much more interested in being creative. So he loved Leiden. The pictures look so cute. Like, how do we live there? And he was very much inspired by his surroundings. He got little canals and cute little streets and beautiful landscapes. It's totally darling Amsterdam vibes. Just imagine walking around those canals just high as fuck. That's goals.
I mean, it's gorge there. Like, absolutely phenom. Beautiful.
Yeah. At this time, Amsterdam was the city that you wanted to start a business in.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is
the
where
New York of... Of the Holland.
Of economy. Yeah. Like, this is Wall Street right here in Amsterdam. Of the Netherlands.
Yeah,
time.
Right.
Seriously. Yeah, yeah. So so he's kind of going back and forth from Leiden and Amsterdam during his whole life. But he pretty much stays in these areas. He's not like Rubens that goes and travels around. He's chilling.
Nah, I'm chill.
Yeah, chilling in the Netherlands for sure.
He's afraid of boats or something. I get it. Maybe, yeah. I'm afraid of flying. I understand. Yeah,
he was just not interested in traveling around. And he was also inspired by his Protestant faith. That during this time in the Netherlands, the Protestants and Calvinists were much more represented than Catholics during this time. They kind of wanted to get away from the whole like Spanish thing and wanted to be represented by their own religion. So he was very Protestant. And all of this might sound familiar if you listen to our Rubens episode. So check out Rubens. Thickness is my sickness.
Thickness is my sickness.
And yeah, Rubens was a good one. Yeah, I thought that was a good one too.
Yeah.
Rembrandt was definitely looking at Rubens for inspiration and admired his work to an extent. But he can't see too much direct connections between Rubens and Rembrandt. Sure. There's definitely.
I mean, it's not like Instagram where you can just go and look at something over and over and over again. You probably go and see it maybe a little bit, right?
Like, yeah, you know, like he could go look at his work. He could look at his etchings. But it's really a divide between classical art and romantic art. So Rubens being one of the greatest classical painters, that's a perfect expression of an ideal situation.
Sure.
So, and romantic being like very personal and very poetic, very more like human and real rather than the classical ideal of beauty.
Right.
So, sure. So definitely there's differences there, but he's looking at his use of light and dark. So I had to bring up the Rubens Rembrandt connection just because it's there.
Kind of lumped together all these definitely Baroque like painters get lumped together, and there's always question, were they looking at each other? Weren't they looking at each other? And yes, these two were.
Yes.
In their closer proximity.
Close proximity, and Rubens being just the hottest shit coming out of that kind of area. But Rembrandt had his own very unique, very, very different style. Rembrandt did not want his work to look like Rubens, but he definitely wanted his lifestyle to look like.
Well, I mean, fuck, who doesn't, right?
He wanted to ball the fuck out. So, but I don't know, the quote, the greater master of our time, Biggie Smalls, more money, more problems.
Hey.
And that'll be a theme coming up. Okay. Ooh. Anyways, he's ended up attending the University of Leiden, but left shortly because he wanted to paint. Again, formal education just wasn't his vibe.
Not a thing. I get it.
Yeah, he was very smart, but he really just wanted to paint. And guess what? His parents approved.
No way.
Yes, and supported his artistic aspirations.
Oh, that's awesome. Finally. Yes. It's go like Andy and Warhol. Dad. Now we got Rembrandt. Got some supportive parents in the house this month.
Yes, supportive parents. And at 14, Rembrandt became an apprentice for Jacob von Swawenberg. Jakey painted like Bosch type shit, like crazy. Oh. The check out Jacob von Swawenberg, The Harrowing of Hell. And it's a good one. It's like a bunch of demons and shit fucking with people and God looking down at them all judgy. It's such a loving God. It's hella metal.
Dude, this is hella metal. Oh my
God. Yeah. So
it's like a storybook. If a storybook was painted about hell.
Definitely. Yeah. So very kind of Bosch style. Bosch has got to have his own episode for sure.
Yeah.
But very, very Dutch. So Swawenberg was really the guy who taught Rembrandt how to prepare his paint. So this process was super tedious and very different than prepping your paints are today. Mm-hmm. Since today, you squeeze fucking paint.
Yeah, you just go and buy your Rembrandt paint and put it on a palette.
On a palette, and that's it.
That's it.
Not back then. So tubed paint wasn't developed until the mid-1800s. Mm. And guess where the mid-1800s are? That's the Impressionist era. So yes, they were more inclined to use a shit ton of it. So paint became more accessible during that time. And it's very obvious when we look at the paintings from the Impressionists, who were actually very much inspired by Rembrandt. But in the Renaissance, it just wasn't so readily available. So how did they make paint? So you would get pigments from minerals from the earth, plants, berries, seashells, exotic looking bugs, whatever you can dry and crush up with a mortar and pestle. Then you can combine the pigment powder with an oil, solvent, varnish kind of combo. Right. An artist would also use lead. So love me some flake white, which is white paint made from lead, which Rembrandt loved to use. So okay, once you use flake white, zinc white just doesn't do it anymore. No. Just don't eat it or let it hang out on your skin. So basically, making paint wasn't as easy as squeezing out of a tube. They had to grind it up themselves. And that's what apprentices would do for artists. And that's why artists needed often many apprentices to work at their studios. And in exchange, the artists would teach their apprentices how to paint. So Rembrandt did a couple of other apprenticeships, and then in 1624, when he was only 18, he opened his own studio that he shared with Jan Lyvens, who is a great portrait painter. So when Rembrandt got into his own studio, he began teaching his own apprentices and students, paid students, and he had many. So he taught them how to draw and paint in exactly his style. Mm-hmm. And historians have actually had a really hard time differentiating the work of the master and the pupil, because he really wanted them to draw and paint exactly like him.
Damn, he sounds like militant a little
bit. He was definitely not as sweet and diplomatic as Rubens was as a teacher.
No, he's like, sit in the chair, you do it exactly fucking like me.
Like do it. So he's really making like little mini me's.
Oh my God. So there's a cool scary.
He's a little scary. Yeah, this guy's a little hardcore. So check out a drawing, Rembrandt and his pupils drawing from a nude model. And you can see how involved he was as a teacher. So to greater emphasize the similarities of his style, you can also check out...
Oh my God,
out...
a bunch of photos of naked chicks came up.
Oh, man.
Bing is not a substitute for Google.
Oh, wow. Basically, yeah, if you can't find it, it's okay. I'll put it up on the Instagram, baroque.v.podcast.
Nice. I'll put it up.
Yes. Yeah. And it is very much like he's holding their hands while he's drawing, and wants them to use exactly the same gestures as he's doing. So to greater emphasize the similarity of style, you can check out two other drawings of the same exact title. Christ as a gardener appearing to Mary Magdalene by Ferdinand Boie. I love that. Boi. And drawing of the same title by Rembrandt. Some historians just cannot tell the difference between the two styles because they are so almost exactly the same kind of style of this quick expressionistic looking line. That's just a little different than
different for the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. And we'll talk about Moore's painting style and why the Impressionists were so inspired by Rembrandt. But you can kind of see, okay, there's energy, there's immediacy, there's what the Impressionists 200 years from this time would have been trying to emulate. So Rembrandt's pretty cool. He's really ahead of his time and very, very influential to his students and his pupils and his apprentices. During this time, Rembrandt also painted his earliest known painting, The Stoning of St. Stephen, which depicts the martyrdom of St. Stephen. He's a guy that gave a speech talking shit about temples or whatever, and people got so mad that they stoned him to death. That's about it. That's the story.
Damn.
It's great. It's a great story. Let's just say the painting is way cooler in the story. And you might notice that the painting has some pretty intense darks and lights.
Yeah.
So this is a technique called chiaroscuro. And it was really mastered by Leonardo da Vinci and our little Caravaggio.
Yeah. Caravaggio
episode.
It's a good one.
And this high contrast use of directional light makes things really pop, guides the viewer around the composition. With chiaroscuro, the artist can manipulate the viewer to see what the artist wants the viewer to see. Also, he's really figuring out his edges here. So sharp and soft edges are important. Rembrandt is one of these Renaissance artists that really understands how the human eye actually sees. The areas in focus with sharp edges are where the viewer is going to look at first, and the areas where it's soft are second. So with the light and edges, we can see where Rembrandt wants us to look first.
Right, at the guy holding the stone up.
Yes, yeah, the action part. And his all of his religious and biblical characters are the most real looking human characters, rather than Rubens and his kind of iconic fancy style of making them all the idealized versions of
right.
beauty. And Rembrandt was a little different. He really wanted them to look human, to look real, so you could have kind of a closeness with these religious figures. So,
less ethereal, more like your average yeah. Joe, like,
exactly.
right?
Yeah, okay. These are guys. Yeah, they're fine.
He's a guy.
Warts and all.
Right.
So the darkness of his paintings was both loved and scrutinized. He almost made fun of the fact that his paintings were so dark. He's using like 27 different kinds of black. or was he maybe making fun of someone like Caravaggio with his chiaroscuro? Yeah, of like they're so dark that it's almost satirical. So you'll definitely notice that out of Rembrandt's paintings that the use of light and dark is so heavy that it's almost like, I can't even see it. I can't see it.
Like, why is it even there? Are you fucking with me? Why do you care?
Or, yeah. Or is there something going on with him being a little silly and a little sarcastic? We don't know. We don't really know because he didn't write anything down.
And it was fucking forever ago.
And it was a long time ago. So we don't really know.
And he wasn't as, like, famous as fucking
exactly right. He was not as famous as the time as Rubens was, so we know a lot more about Rubens than we do about Rembrandt's earlier days. But during the beginning of his career, he did change his name from Rembrandt without a D. He added the D before the T, so he got some D in there. Rembrandt.
Rembrandt,
which translates to obstruct light in Dutch.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. So we see you, Rembrandt.
We see you.
And it was interesting because he's one of the only artists. So with a little bit of arrogance here, he's one of the only Dutch artists that signs his first name just like Titian
and the Italians.
And,
yeah,
and the Italian.
Yeah.
So he was kind of making a point that, listen, I'm not Rembrandt von Braun, blah, 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 blah. I'm Rembrandt. I'm fucking Madonna. I'm Cher.
I am one name. You need not know the other.
Yes.
That's awesome. I want that.
Yeah, one name, and he changed it to kind of play with the words a little bit to obstruct light. So dude. So darkness was really his vibe for sure.
Methodical. That's fucking dope.
Yes. Yeah. Remember, it's cool. Remember, it's super smart, but he's also funny. With all this in mind, I did just want to get to another point for our listeners that might be new to looking at art. I talk a lot about this with my students because sometimes they have like a hard time going to museums, and it's totally understandable. Museums can be so fucking boring.
Oh my God.
So when you go to an art museum, museums can be either very inspirational or very boring. The boring mm-hmm. version is when you look at every single painting one after the other. So you'll really start thinking like, is there booze here?
Do we have to look at
like,
this?
Can we get lunch right now? Like, I'm really hungry. Need a drink. Can we get mimosa? So you'll never remember what you looked at since you looked at 100 freaking paintings.
Yeah, I know. Just pick a few, man.
Yes. And ultimately, you'll kind of just think art is boring. But there's another way to use an art museum for inspiration. So when you go into one of those rooms, that's a collection. Mm-hmm. Stand in the middle of the room. Do a little twirl. Do a little 360.
Yeah.
And one of those paintings will hit you from afar.
It's like walking into a bar. You scan the room for the person you want to go after.
Yeah. That's
you just say like the hottest one. Do that.
You don't have to look at all of
them. And then you maybe have a one or two maybes after that.
Yeah, then you'll see, maybe. Okay. We'll see what's up with this.
Right.
So give that painting your attention and maybe pass the other. So congratulations, you have officially allowed a painting to impact you.
Yeah.
So not only is Rembrandt painting using chiaroscuro, he's also making super impactful prints as well. And loved experimenting with different kinds of etching effects on different papers. He made fucking 300 print. With his experimentation with printmaking, he's pretty much changed printmaking since that. So printmakers fucking love Rembrandt. Mm. And he also loved collecting prints, specifically from Albrecht Dürer.
Oh, yeah, the guy.
He's also very dark.
Yeah.
And he also loved collecting other curiosities, including taxidermy, weapons, stones, seashells. That's why I'm like in front of my stuff right now, because once I found that out, I looked at my wall and I'm like, oh,
wait a second,
all of that stuff too. Yeah, and I have my little Rembrandt duplication right there. So yes, I do that too. And he spent more money than he had on those things, and so do I. So I definitely can. Yeah, I can commiserate with
that
Rembrandt.
Peacock is iconic.
Yes, Monsieur Le Monde. this peacock back here, if you're watching this on YouTube, peacock back there. Peacock. This was an antique that has literally been, he's been in and out of so many apartments and so many cities. He's fallen off the wall several times. I got my peacock and I got my boar's head now back there.
Dude.
So I got a bunch of weird stuff. And
so dope.
Me and Rembrandt definitely had a similar taste. Now, Rembrandt did make some money with commissions, but did not enjoy fame during his lifetime like Rubens did. Yeah, but many saw his painting style kind of strange. But now we see that he was very, very ahead of his time. Vincent van Gogh, 200 years later, said, "The fragment of Rembrandt's anatomy lesson, yes, I was astounded by it too. Do you remember those flesh colors? It is of the earth, particularly the feet." So Vincent van Gogh absolutely loved. Well, maybe. But he absolutely loved Rembrandt. And the quote from Vincent is about the anatomy lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp. And it is a painting of a guild of surgeons performing a dissection of a convicted criminal.
That's
what they did. And it's kind of weird. I did not know about these. These anatomy lessons were really common during this time in the Netherlands. And even the general public would be encouraged to watch them. So that they were totally open to the public. But of course, mostly doctors, anatomy people, scientists would be watching. There's a lot of new science happening, sciencey things, innovations happening during this time. But it was kind of like a scene. Like you would go like a show to basically dissect this man.
It looks like a vagina is coming out of his arm.
Yeah, the weird tendon. I hate all that stuff. Blah, 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 blah.
And his like body is like weird. Like the foreshortening is kind of off and awkward.
Well, this was really different too, because the subject, the main character, is actually the guy being dissected.
Right.
So with some of these paintings, it's usually the star surgeon or the teacher, professor, whatever, the guy being really highlighted. But actually who's being highlighted here is the guy being dissected, which is really, really different and very
Rembrandt, honestly, we should kind of think about that guy a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Right? So he's in the foreground. He has the sharp edges. He has the light. And he is, the one being foreshortened right here into a strange perspective. And super different that a lot of these surgeon guilds would commission paintings of their anatomy lessons. But this was definitely a lot different than the other ones, because it's like, why are you? I'm the one that's paying for this.
Right.
Why are you showing the guy in the fort? I should be in the fort. I'm the surgeon. But it's just, it's very Rembrandt of him to do something like this. So, and maybe it's because the convicted criminal is more human than the rest of them. And they're really seeing the insides of him. That he's, that's the more
human. He's the one really teaching us the lesson here.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So
like you fuck around and find out. Maybe
Rembrandt, Rembrandt was only 25 years old when he painted this. So really? It was one of his earliest paintings. And he's also using a level of immediacy with his brushwork, and especially a lot later on in his career, the more almost unfinished his work looks in some of those areas. He's letting the audience fill in the rest of the information. Right. And he's also using a lot of fucking paint for the time.
Oh.
So you'll look at a Rembrandt in real life in IRL and you'll see an almost three-dimensional quality to it.
Mm.
It's not an illusion of three dimensions. The paint is coming out of the fucking canvas like a sculpture. So this is another thing that I show my students a lot. So I'm bringing my students a lot because Rembrandt's It is constantly being brought up when we get to the portraiture section.
Mm-hmm.
So I show my students Rembrandt all the time, especially when they're having trouble painting the little tiny eyelids and that little tiny shadow underneath the lid. It's really hard to paint, and they usually have questions about it. Well, Rembrandt didn't paint that little tiny shadow. It's actually a fucking shadow. Rembrandt would use such thick paint that it would cast a shadow down on itself.
Wow.
So that's why it's just so good. How did he get that tiny little sliver of
shadow?
How
did you know what the lighting would be like? And how did you do that?
Yeah, he's actually casting a shadow instead of painting it. That's why we talk about this bitch. Because it's just like, come on, that's so smart. So Rembrandt isn't alone during all this. He married the love of his life, Saskia van Uhlenberg, in 1633. Saskia was 21 and Rembrandt was 27. So not bad. Not bad.
No, it's okay.
There'll be some other stuff later. Mm. Okay, but he was just obsessed with her. She also came from a wealthy family, so that kind of helped Rembrandt's spending habits a little bit. And she quickly became his muse, being featured in several works and used also as a placeholder for any female characters he needed, any kind of Bible stories or anything else.
Mm.
So check out a fun one, Saskia van Uhlenberg, an Arcadian costume. She's got a different kind of look, but
she looks like she's going to the Renaissance.
She is definitely renaissancing here.
I love her long, large sleeves. I'm a big fan of a bell sleeve. Yes. This is awesome.
Yeah. So Saskia had an interesting look, but she was very beautiful, had this beautiful kind of reddish blonde hair. They had four kids together, and unfortunately, Rembrandt outlived all of them.
Oh, no. Yeah, so that's is fucked gonna be, up.
Yes, tragedy is going to be a common theme for Rembrandt later on in his life, but we'll continue on. Mm-hmm. Not only is Rembrandt painting people's portraits, he's also a hardcore selfie queen.
Oh, my God, I love him.
Yes, with a record 100 known self-portraits, drawings, paintings, etchings, fucking everything. So most artists of this time would maybe paint a couple portraits here and there.
Sure.
But not Rembrandt. So there are a couple of reasons that speculated that he painted so many self-portraits. One, to gain painting skills. Two, to promote his skills to potential patrons. And to understand how to paint true human emotion.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see different looks. You'll see surprise. You'll see sad. You'll see all different kinds. You'll see kind of cocky. You'll see all different kinds of emotions throughout his whole lifetime. Remember, he's our little feely Cancer. So he's really, really into to emotion. He's really into his feelings. And yeah. Check out one of mine. This one's so
I like
good.
This one that he's like, ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
He's doing blue steel.
Blue steel. Yes. He definitely has some great model poses. So check out one of my favorite self-portraits, Laughing Out Loud.
Oh my God, LOL.
I know. Our selfie queen is literally lolling. He's so cute. God,
that's so funny. But yes, this is a very sweet, cute portrait of Rembrandt.
Yeah, he was really
so youthful and like,
yeah, and he was really big on painting himself as a real human. So like warts and all, he would definitely be like hashtag no filter for sure. So, and in his self-portraits, you can also see the rise and fall of the painter. So in his earlier work, when he's really living beyond his means, he's showing off his fancy clothes. And later on, he looks plain and old, decrepit and humble. So you can kind of see his ups and downs throughout his life. So he never kept any, not we know of, he never kept any kind of journal or memoir or didn't write anything down. But we have these to see what kind of state of mind he might have been enduring at the time, especially with losing babies, definitely losing economic status throughout his life. So you can definitely see that throughout his 100 fucking self-portraits of from youth to old man. And it's pretty crazy. And these portraits have just been studied over and over and over again with his level of humanness that just is unmatched. What humbled our ambitious, arrogant little painter?
Yeah, what the fuck brought him back down?
Well, we might as well get into it.
Yes, finally.
Finally. The painting that led to Rembrandt's legacy and downfall, the painting known as The Night Watch.
The Night Watch.
Commissioned by Captain Banning Cocke, who is the gentleman.
I'm sorry, I'm 12.
Banning Cocke, who is the gentleman in red and black. The Night Watch is a civic guard painting that was very popular during the 80 Years' War in the Netherlands. So this was common to have a painting like this done. So remember the Netherlands Spanish drama? Well, these guards courageously protected Dutch citizens from the Spanish army. Well, about 40 years ago, time of the making of the painting, civic guards were still relevant, but more of a symbol of Dutch independence and strength. However, they acted more as kind of a men's club than more than anything, an excuse for dudes to come together and chill and possibly involve themselves with debauchery.
Bacchus. Who's fucking who? Who's doing what drugs? I want to know.
What happens when a lot of very wealthy, influential men get together in a little men's only club?
What, but fucking?
Bad stuff.
Bad stuff. Okay.
We'll get into that. Bad stuff, corruption, abuse of power, and possibly murder to get to the top.
So, oh my God.
I know the Netherlands. You Dutch guys are intense. Wow. Okay, so what I'm about to talk about is alleged.
Okay.
And a collection of my favorite conspiracy theories about the painting, but it's fun tea nonetheless.
Gossip. That's why you're here.
Let's
have some fun. Use your imagination.
Now, of course, if you know about some of the arguments about this painting, I have to mention Peter Greenaway's movie, J'accuse. But after watching it, I'm totally fucking convinced that this painting is a murder accusation.
Oh my God.
I really just want to believe it. But many Rembrandt scholars reject this conspiracy.
Okay,
but
whatever.
They're fucking boring. And fine, then you give a better explanation of this, that it's, give me an explanation rather than it's a great military painting, because it's fucking
honestly
not.
I just after doing this, I feel like no history is objective, like not truly objective.
100%.
People write what they want to believe,
and we don't really know what this guy 400 years ago was thinking.
We're all speculating.
And there's some weird female mascot that has never been a thing in a militia painting. bullshit. Like, explain this craziness.
All right.
Regardless of if it's a murder accusation or not, the painting is still really funny. And it shows that Rembrandt, well, he's just like a Baroque bitch. Yes. So Rembrandt's friend, patron, and subject for one of the greatest portraits he ever made, Jan 6, said when the painting was unveiled, "I can see nothing in it but shadows, darkness, and confusion. You surely don't expect us to take this as serious art."
Oh. Dick. Okay, little bitch. Well, whatever.
Sick. So let's look at this thing. Mm, so look at the two figures in the front. That's Banning Cock in the black and red. Next to him, Lieutenant Rutenbirch in shining white and gold. So red and black are the colors of Amsterdam, but it is usual for the captain of a Dutch civic guard to wear a blue sash instead of a red one. So red and white, or red and black next to white and gold. I mean, it's kind of obvious there's a big contrast there.
Right.
And you might even notice a demonic tail in between Banningcock's legs. So
Banningcock is on the left or the right?
He's the red and black guy. He's the big guy. And there's a little thing.
Yeah, I see it.
Like, that is confusing. That doesn't seem like a cloak from another person. It seems like a fucking tail. And look at Lieutenant Spear. So the lieutenant is the guy in white. That's a big spear. And look at the position and the shape of the spear. And there's also a shadow from Banningcock's hand reaching for the spear directly in front of the lieutenant's crotch. I mean, this is dick-shaped. And then in the x-rays of this, it's been x-rayed a million times. In the x-rays of this, Rembrandt kept making it bigger and bigger.
Oh, like it needs to be obvious.
Bigger. I mean, that's pretty obviously what's going on there.
Oh my God.
I mean, do we just have dirty minds, or is Rembrandt fucking doing that? The shadow is reaching for his big wiener. And Banningcock's shadow, so the shadow of the hand, is also cups the emblem of Amsterdam on the lieutenant's coat. There's like a really tiny little animal there. And a lot of the boring, stuffy historians say, he has his hands on Amsterdam. He's protecting Amsterdam. Or does Cock have Amsterdam by the cock as well? I don't know.
I don't know.
We're not sure. But it's just like, you're reaching for his penis, dude. Like, come on. So there was speculation that there might have been some debauchery between these two guys.
Oh, like they're doing it.
They might have been doing it. A freaking gunshot is fired right behind the lieutenant, the gold guy. So you can see a plume of smoke like right fucking here behind his hat. And that would have been a really serious offense if that would have really happened during one of these militia preparations. Mm-hmm. Either Rembrandt is making some kind of statement that these guys either kill to get ahead and call it an accident, or he's saying that they're just incompetent as fuck and clumsy.
Don't know how to fire a pistol.
Yeah, don't know how to use their weapons. Yeah, so either one, it's fun. However, there is a man directly seen in between Banningcock and the lieutenant's head. And he's guiding the barrel of the gun with his hand, either away from the lieutenant's head or towards something else or someone else. And who is firing the gun? An unknown militia member facing away, facing the random ass girl in glowing gold. So who the fuck is the girl?
Yeah, who is, what's the lady
Everyone's
doing there?
Tripping about this chick. So every boring Rembrandt scholar is like, it's a mascot for the militia.
A mascot for war.
What? There has never been a mascot in a civic guard painting. Nonetheless, a mascot that's a strange-looking woman with chickens. And they just can't explain it so well. Like, so explain it. They can't without saying, like, don't assume that this sassy ass artist is spilling tea. She's the chickens are a good symbol. fucking please. So there's many assumptions about the girl with the chickens. and the girl behind her. So if she's a mascot, why would there be two girls? There's another little sliver of a chick behind her. There's two, with one girl hiding her face. So my favorite conspiracy is that the girls are illegitimate daughters of one of the guards. The guards are actually being accused of getting serviced at orphanages instead of brothels. Yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
So basically Rembrandt is
allegedly
accusing these dudes of being pedophilic predators.
Oh, and that means it's true. Oh my God. On
the innocent. I'm going to assume. I can only assume the girl behind the main girl.
How could he have thought of that? I mean, unless it was true.
Unless it's fucking true. So the girl Yeah. And if you are going to have like a female mascot, wouldn't you want like Athena or something?
Yeah.
Like someone that's an ideal Greek goddess, or maybe Mary or someone, you know, like
a million percent.
Weird girl that looks kind of scared. Like, why wouldn't you want the goddess of war or something like that, or something pious like that? I don't
know. He's fucking with them for sure.
The girl behind the main girl is being hidden because apparently she was a real person and some asshole disfigured her by pouring boiling hot water on her face for being a harlot or fucking whatever. Yeah, because they were abusing these poor little girls in these orphanages. Right.
It's your fault for being too tempting.
Yeah, we're not fucking bullshit. I mean, it still fucking happens today. It's bullshit. So there are chicken. There's a chicken on the girl's waist. Mm-hmm. Boring scholars are like, it's a chicken that the girl is going to prepare for the brave men to eat.
They're making chicken.
Okay. Another scholarly interpretation is that the claw was a symbol for the musket that they use. But I would think that it would be the claw from like an eagle or a hawk, not a fucking chicken. And to me, a chicken is a chicken is a chicken. And I think Rembrandt is just being a real Baroque bitch that we can identify with here. And look at how Banningcock's glove resembles the chicken's claw. They're like parallel to each other. So maybe the chicken is his emblem. Mm-hmm. So I'm not lost, Rembrandt. Like, we see you. So murder accusation or not, he's fucking making fun of them. I just don't have any doubt that he's making fun of them.
Right.
And we can get into, there's a lot on this, but we can get into another juicy little conspiracy about Banningcock's glove.
Yeah.
So Banningcock is holding out his bare left hand to the viewer. Pretty interesting in itself, but his gloved right hand, he's holding another right-handed glove. So not the glove that goes on his left hand. Explain. So the glove allegedly belongs to Andreas de Graaf.
Okay.
And you can see the challenged glove at the feet of Rembrandt's portrait of Andreas, who happens to be Banningcock's brother-in-law.
What? So
check, and I'll tell you about the drama here. So check out portrait of a man standing in parentheses, possibly Andreas de Graaf. So you can see that there is a glove at his feet, and that would be commonly considered a challenge glove.
Oh.
I challenge you.
I challenge thy to a duel.
Yes, because you stole my woman or some shit. Some fucking guy.
So who doth thou venture damn?
So Andres, once he saw this portrait, so he commissioned a portrait, but once he saw the portrait, he didn't want to pay for it. Because he kind of looked like he was drunk and impulsive with his challenge glove thrown on the ground. And it also is speculated that he is standing in front of a very well-known hangout for men that do debaucherous things.
Oh, the nightclub.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So this is not a flattering portrait of this gentleman. And Rembrandt wasn't having this, so he fucking sued him. And guess who ended up paying for the painting? His brother-in-law, Bancock himself, picking up his glove for him. So murder accusation or not, these men seem much less brave protectors of the city and much more incompetent, clumsy, foolish fucking idiots. So, like, look around. These guys, I wouldn't feel safe with these guys in charge.
No.
I don't know about Amsterdam.
It's like in The Wire, all the cops are just wasted. McNulty is just getting fucking drunk. Dude, you gotta watch The Wire. And it's like, these are the guys protecting, quote unquote, protecting us. I don't buy it. You guys are just getting wasted and beating on your wives, fuckers.
Yes. Yeah. And all the composition does point to Bancock, and there's actually a guy pointing at him too. Right next to the hand of the guy pointing at Bancock, there's a man looking directly at the viewer. Supposedly, he was some sort of whistleblower that exposed some of this corruption of murder and incest and shitty pedophile stuff. And we even do see the one eye of Rembrandt himself in the dark in between the two guards in the back behind Bancock, watching all of this go down.
So
very nice. So we're not totally sure how Bancock reacted to the painting, but I guess he liked it enough to hang it in Amsterdam City Hall.
Didn't get it.
I guess he didn't get it. I mean, maybe there was some sort of deal made, but even though he did have to chop up the painting to fit in the space, so he had to remove two figures or accomplices or witnesses.
Oh my God.
So that technically that piece has never been found. We just know what it looks like due to a copy of the original painting, a duplication of the original painting. So you, if you happen to have a weird skinny piece of canvas rolled up somewhere with two shadowy faces, go ahead and send it to the Baroque bitches.
We'll take it.
We'll take it up.
We'll get it into the correct people.
So I probably wouldn't be too keen on the painting if that was represented my militia.
No.
Or maybe Bancock was scared that someone was onto him, so he accepted it anyway. So that's really the conspiracy.
Like, it's too hot. Don't want to blow it up further.
Yep. It looks like somebody might be onto me. So anyway, the painting now belongs to Amsterdam and is displayed in the Rijksmuseum and has been vandalized several times. So it was slashed in 1975 by a dude that said he did it for the Lord. And you can still see, you can still barely see the slash marks in the lower right-hand corner, even after extensive repairs. It was also sprayed with fucking acid apparently an escaped psychiatric patient. And again, had to be extensively repaired. And now the painting is under permanent 24/7 surveillance. And which I
like,
get
the Mona Lisa just behind a bunch of stuff.
Exactly, behind a bar, and there's guards there always standing by it, watching everybody. Right. So yeah, don't try to fuck up the fucking painting again.
Somebody had to ruin it for everybody.
Yes, exactly. So during this time, right before the painting was finished, unfortunately, Rembrandt's beloved wife Saskia dies from tuberculosis at the age of 29.
Fuck.
And yeah, this really represents Rembrandt's downfall. So he didn't paint after this for years. Yeah, he was not accepting commissions or anything. He was really, really heartbroken. And she did die a few months after his son Titus was born. So Titus was the only child to survive into adulthood. Ugh. Now, this is really where it gets kind of sad. Now, Rembrandt needed a wet nurse for Titus, so he hired Herge Dirks, and they quickly became lovers. Then some drama happened. So, she he had another maid too, and it looked a younger maid, and it looked like Rembrandt was pretty fucking into her. So Hergé knew about this, and you know, decided to cause some havoc for his life. He actually went ahead and confined her to a women's prison after she asked him for money. Even though she took care of Titus, not her kid, she cared for Saskia when she was sick and dying. She was living, they were essentially living as a married couple for 8 years. And he basically, it's a long story, but he basically accused her of being a prostitute.
Oh my God.
Fucking asshole.
So he's like, listen, bitch, like this younger bitch is here and I don't want Get you out. Anymore.
Yeah.
And so if you don't leave, you're going to jail.
Basically.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, that's why we're scared of you guys. Like, men. Because it's like, okay, send her to, she's a whore. Send her
she's
away.
She's a harlot. She.
I'm like, dude, like, she took care of your kid. Okay, dude.
She took care of your kid and your dying wife. And she also took care of you, giving you midnight fucking favors.
And he was basically just over it. So,
he sent her to prison.
So he sent her to prison. God. So Rembrandt ended up getting Rembrandt's
So basically, fuck Rembrandt.
Yes. Yeah. This is where he does not become so favorable. So Rembrandt did have this new housekeeper, the fresher, younger housekeeper that happened to be 20 years younger than him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hendrike Stoffels. And she basically became his common law wife. So she was the model for his painting Bathsheba at her bath. So you can kind of see what she looks like there. And she had the only child that lived past Rembrandt, Cornelia, his daughter. So poor Cornelia was around during the time that Rembrandt was pretty much selling fucking everything he owns, the paintings, etching, weird taxidermy and whatnot. And he even had to sell Saskia's grave for funds to fund his life. And
oh my God.
Yes. Yeah. And during this time, he gets back into making stuff, mostly etchings. And these etchings are fucking weird. So he makes like a whole series of erotic etchings and drawings. So check out The French Bed, which is a Rembrandt drawing. And he made several drawings of people fucking and people like peeing and stuff, like fucking urinating everywhere.
My
like,
God,
he's yeah, starting no, to get weird. Doing it. Yeah, he's starting to get kind of weird, and definitely.
I saw one guy like in a holding his dick and peeing.
Mm-hmm. There's some like peeing etchings and drawings, which is just fucking bizarre. And I mean, really kind of funny. So you can see his humor there, but it is also like very dark humor of like.
Well, yeah, okay. It's just like guys peeing on things. Like, that's and gross.
Fucking, and it's not like an ideal fucking situation. It's like a lot of these people are still clothed. Like, they're just getting it in. It's fucking bizarre. You can totally see some fucking darkness there. And of course, later on,
little rapey.
It's rapey. It's weird. Yeah. Titus dies at the age of 26 from tuberculosis. So his only son ends up dying before him. And then a year later, on October 4th, 1669, Rembrandt dies at the age of 63, some say from grief. From his wife and baby
dying. I mean,
we're not totally sure why he died, but some poets say
they didn't have like, you know, fucking doctors that could analyze that really back then, right?
Yeah, we weren't sure. It might have been from tuberculosis, since a lot of people both his wife and his son both died from tuberculosis. So it could have been complications, respiratory stuff.
Sure.
But everyone likes to say it's from grief. From his only son dying.
How romantic. But he kind of sounds like a total fucking asshole who wasn't really concerned about it. So
yeah, towards the end, he was bankrupt, totally unknown, was not known as an artist at this time. And he was buried in an unmarked grave in Westerkerk, Amsterdam.
Damn.
Yeah, we still don't really know where his body is. But of course, Now, Rembrandt is known as the greatest Dutch painter of all time. Sure. And one of the greatest storytellers in the history of art, and his ability to render the humanness of a human is unmatched, and his unique painting techniques continue to inspire artists to this day.
Yeah, and people in the museums, I'm sure, are like, don't worry about the woman in prison. Yeah, like, it's not in the bag. Like,
yeah.
Sorry about the ladies later. Like, don't talk about them. It's fine.
Totally. Yeah, especially because the Dutch fucking love this guy. And, I mean, he's the Dutch star, really, now. Yeah. Really started becoming more popular during the Impressionist era because they're just like, wait a second. This is what we're trying to do.
Sure.
And this guy was doing it in the 1600s.
Yeah.
This is the guy that we need to be looking at. Van Gogh.
This is our Lord and Savior.
100%. Him. Yeah, so he did come back into power way after his death.
Good one. Fuck.
Guy at the party.
Who is he? Who is he at the party?
Who can we compare Rembrandt to today? So I'm going to say it. Nicolas Cage. Yes. The eccentric, talented. Or is he making fun of us? Is he making fun of himself?
I mean,
is he the greatest actor of all time?
I don't know. I honestly question it myself. I mean, National Treasure is like a conspiracy theory in itself.
Seriously? Yeah, conspiracy.
So oh my God.
So it is fun that pretty much every movie that he plays into is like the poster of his face. So lots of self-portraits there for sure. And he's also got some very interesting spending habits and likes to collect strange things. So here's a couple of fun things that he bought. Apparently, he spent $150,000 on a pet octopus.
Oh, my God. Nicolas Cage did?
Yes. And $270,000 on a dinosaur skull.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, he's collecting some weird stuff.
He's doing it I can so I will situation.
However, he did have to file for bankruptcy in 2009.
Right.
And has faced some pretty serious tax issues. Apparently he owed like $1 million to to the state. But we still love him.
We do.
And he's a national treasure. Just like Rembrandt.
Oh my God, dude. Good one. Good job.
Our beloved Rembrandt. One little side note, his work has been stolen about 80 times.
Oh my God.
People keep stealing his artwork. But kind of fun. So
no, great. I mean, I learned so much. That was a good one.
Good.
I mean, I just like honestly thought it would be a little fluffy just because of the branding today of like, oh, you know, you can buy the pencils.
Yeah, and you can buy Rembrandt paints. Mm. And he loves self-portraits.
I just like I thought if there was a national branding, it would have been after somebody like probably more like Rubens, honestly.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Except for the whole like pedophilia thing.
I just feel like this is what we gotta talk. It's like now pedophilia is the new syphilis.
Oh my God. And it's just like Seriously. Never stop.
Seriously. Oh. They just keep liking those little girls.
Ugh, it's disgusting. Well, we have a newsletter that we're starting every month. No spam, nothing like that.
Ew.
Go ahead, sign up. Link in bio on Instagram. Instagram
baroque.b.podcast. Follow us. We be making memes. They're fun.
Follow. I don't even know what you call it anymore. Is it a meme? Is it a post? Is it a video? We're doing it, though.
Lots of stuff.
We're putting it out there. We're loving on you.
And if you follow us, we'll follow you, too.
Follow follow her, follow whatever. Yeah. But we want to know. Slide into our DMs. Tell us who you want to hear about. Do you want to be on the show? Come on the show. We're accepting guests. Come on.
The show.
be on the show.
Check out our stickers. We've got Raquel printed a shit ton of stickers. So check out the links in our bio and our website, baroquebpodcast.com.
Yeah, and we got Patreon. We are going to post some like free videos on Patreon to show you what it's all about, what you can expect. We'll play some fun games. We'll do some fun stuff.
We're doing things, y'all.
We're doing things. We're making friends. And thank you for your support. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being you.
Yeah.
Like, subscribe. You know, all the bullshit things we have to say. Give us a star. Give us a review. We want to know what you think. We want to know what you want to hear about.
Or at least just tune in every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And be one of us.
One of us. All right.
Okay.
Listen,
we love you. Bye.